to Anna Henderson to make sense of Canberra, Chief Political Correspondent with SBS. Anna, welcome to the show.
Well, that's a very tall order, David. I don't know if I can make sense of the place this week, but I'll give it my best shot.
Don't talk yourself down, woman. Now look.
Oh, I'm not. I just mean some of it is so opaque.
We'll get there. Now, first the melon scandal. Mm. All over the News Limited newspapers. We didn't notice, but 6 weeks ago, when he was also saying he wanted to get into bed with Kylie Minogue, the Prime Minister discussed a gift of melons from the Prime Minister of Japan and held his hands in a suggestive manner. Now, we didn't notice this until today. How come? Has it broken over the Prime Minister's head, his hands?
Well, I think it's all in the interpretation, and I think there are a number of elements here. Can I take you back to, in fact, when you and I spoke about the visit on the night after the Japanese Prime Minister, Sanae Takaichi, came to Canberra? It was a very brief trip.
Yes.
And we discussed whether or not anything had really happened. And I know that many in the world of Japan-Australia relations were quite shocked that the media kind of summed up that not much happened, because they felt like it was a really substantial trip and engagement and had settled some really important things between the two countries. And then I remember asking, as we always do, so what was the gift exchange? And there was sort of a hush that went over the Japanese side, and they very quietly informed me that these very special crown melons, which are, you know, some of the sort of best fruit Japan has to offer, were going to be given to the Prime Minister. And it's quite unusual to have sort of edible, sort of fresh produce in the mix. But I thought that was interesting and something a bit different, and, you know, spoke to Japan's sort of trade, and these were very expensive pieces of fruit. So they're very excited about it. I'm sure that those on the Japanese side, when they're preparing their diplomatic cables, who listened to that podcast, would have been pretty shocked to hear the melons come up in this conversation and then be the subject
public
of
exposure
this.
Of melons.
And just it was. I think it was absolutely meant to be a gift of high quality, like a really good bottle of wine.
Yep.
And now it's ended up in this discussion. But look, the Prime Minister's office is adamant that he was not making a suggestive gesture with his hands around the melons to suggest anything about the Japanese Prime Minister physically, that he was talking about the melons, that the person he was being interviewed by was adding in, you know, potentially suggestive innuendo, talking about Pamela Anderson, etc. But the Prime Minister was not making that inference in what he was doing and saying. But that hasn't stopped, as you say, not only the former Japanese ambassador here, Shingo Yamagami, from weighing in and being very critical. Some Japanese media representatives have also written about this and raised the question of whether or not it demeaned the Japanese Prime Minister.
And Anna, it was apparently so obvious that it took us 6 weeks to notice. I sit in a high-tech studio where there's a bank of televisions beaming newses from several channels to me as I speak to you. And I see, soundlessly, there he is again, moving his hands. I don't think they're cupped in a breast-like fashion at all. But anyway, News Limited does, and so we are in the midst of a scandal.
So we have had various political comments come through, particularly from the opposition, saying, does an apology need to be given, etc. What I can tell you from the Japanese side is that there has been no, that I'm aware, diplomatic concern raised here. Now, these are two countries that want to be side by side at the moment. In no way does the first Japanese Prime Minister, who's had previous issues around, you know, criticism of her gender, want to get wrapped up in another issue where she's not considered a strong Thatcherite leader that she wants to present herself as. So the message from Japan is, in terms of their diplomatic engagement with Australia, that this is not a big deal. It's not something they want to make an issue of, and they want to move on with the relationship, with the defence and strategic relationship between the two countries. But at the same time, you can't avoid the fact that a former ambassador has written a very critical piece, and that there are other Japanese media representatives who have questioned, you know, this being seen through a gender lens. The problem is that Shingo Yamagami was no fan of the Labor government. And so, you know, it always prompts this question of what sort of driven him to want to be so critical and to draw these inferences and assertions around the podcast. In the end, I think it was a pretty probably rough and misconstrued day at the office for the Prime Minister the day he recorded that podcast.
How could News Limited have missed it for how could News Limited have missed it for 6 weeks? 6 weeks until it was pointed out to them. Anyway,
I do need to say one thing around this. At the time, it did raise eyebrows. People were a little confused
the
by
Mellon reference.
What was going on there. But if nobody raised it at the time, and the Japanese side didn't say that this is offensive, nobody was really raising it in a public, critical way, the Prime Minister, because it isn't really clear what's going on. But no. Yes, as you say, it's now been raised in a different way, and it's been
conceived to be a diplomatic incident. Anna, those melons have been weaponized. Let me leave it at that. Weaponized. Now, look. There is one issue which the Prime Minister is in deep trouble about, and that is the response of his government to gambling. And it appears that he is reaching over the aisle, as they say in the United States, to talk to Angus Taylor about possible solutions.
It does. Well, they've definitely met today, and I think there are talks afoot. There's a deal afoot, David. I feel like when you're watching the trajectory of these things, you'll often see a few stories that say, you know, Labor says it's, you know, with us or not at all and we'll withdraw the legislation. I don't think that was ever really going to be the reality here because the government is under a lot of pressure to do something on gambling ads. And so now, you know, the chats are happening with Angus Taylor. There's more focus on the inducement side of things, which wasn't necessarily going to be addressed in the same way. That hearing in the last week, I think, has really put a rocket under this issue because it just exposed allegations that were so dramatic around drug use, about, you know, sex workers and other allegations of how gambling companies were potentially encouraging people to maintain their high roller status and the kinds of things that problem gamblers are being offered to keep on going. And I do think that has supercharged the conversation. But I also think, as I've said before, that, you know, any family sitting down to watch, you know, a rugby league game which spans past the 8:30 mark and ends up having their kids really exposed to a lot of gambling advertising, starts to wonder, you know, what the impact of that is on young kids, let alone problem gamblers who are, you know, dealing with this kind of material. So, yes, it seems like the two are in discussions, and it will be a rare moment perhaps of them getting something done together in recent history. But at the same time, I think this is where both parties see themselves as being able to potentially point to how a strategic, mainstream, in their view, party of government or opposition can work together. And that helps them provide even more distance with, you know, what populism and one nation and a party that can't actually get things
Anna,
done.
But Anna, work together to do what? I hardly expect that Angus Taylor and the coalition are going to put together a pact with Albanese to, say, ban all gambling advertising, which is the fundamental wish of an overwhelming majority of Australians.
Well, no, that's not how the parliament will work this out. There'll be some kind of strategic move to reduce, and I think, as I said, the inducement side of things will be more of a focus. It won't be what some on Labor's backbench want. It won't be what the Greens want. The Liberal Party is under pressure because, you know, there's two pathways essentially. Labor can find a pathway with the Greens or a pathway with the coalition to get things through the Senate. And the Greens and what they're pushing for is outside the bounds of what the government wants to do at the prime ministerial level and cabinet level. So they want to find common ground with the coalition, which is under pressure to do the deal, so the sort of Greens approach doesn't end up being the way, you know, any government goes, which I don't think it would anyway. But we don't know everything that was discussed in that room today when the Prime Minister and opposition leader met to find out exactly what will be in this legislation. Sadly, I wasn't invited. But at the same time, you know, I do assume, given the pressure that's on Angus Taylor as well from within his party, that we will at least see some strengthening of what Labor initially put forward, even though it won't be, you know, what the Peter Murphy review recommended.
Now, immigration, there was a kerfuffle last week because Cabinet was expected to come up with a decision on, fresh decision on immigration restriction. It didn't happen. Where are we with that now?
Well, unless I should refresh my page and check, but unless we've had an update very recently, there's no rescheduled address for Tony Burke to head to the press club, which is where he was going to make this immigration announcement. And while, like, I'm told from multiple people who were very aware of the cabinet deliberations that it wasn't a situation where Tony Burke went in, put his foot down and was rolled by cabinet. Apparently it was more like he had a number of options he presented. Cabinet members were considering them. There was a little bit of concern about, you know, whether or not enough work had been done to settle on a final position. And so then cabinet wasn't prepared to, you know, choose one of the options essentially. So it was a misstep by the looks of things for Tony Burke to have already set himself, you know, a day at the press club, sell tickets and have this all laid out and ready to go if he hadn't done enough work to get cabinet on side. Now, you know how governments love to find the silver lining? I think there's now a view that this time in between has actually meant that a lot of the problems in the immigration system, individual issues, have been sort of ventilated and focused on. Maybe we'll lay the groundwork for the public to be more educated about this issue when he actually gets to the press club. But I think it's all looked very messy, and that when he does get up, there will be some tough calls from the government around how they're going to ensure that the net overseas migration number is restricted. And some of the people who are very, you know, intelligent in this space, academics who've done a lot of work, just tear their hair out to think that the Labor government, which knows that net overseas migration is a measure that includes Australians returning to their country, is this sort of blunt instrument, has been weaponized by the right to say we've got mass migration and the borders are overflowing, when it may not be the best measure. But now the government has had to be held to that forecast. It's not even a target. It's just a forecast that Treasury puts out as whether or not they have met their immigration requirements as a government, and is now going to tighten all these settings to try and influence something which in the past they've said is not really able to be exactly influenced by government policy.
Do we, in brief, know what the minister wanted and the cabinet stopped him announcing?
Not really, because there were three options and I don't know which one Tony Burke was pursuing. But there's multiple layers to it, and some of the discussion was going to be around like working visas, you know, even working holiday makers.
It's down in the details.
Family reunion. Well, one of the jitters is when you start talking about tightening up family reunion. And that's a big one, because people who are trying to get visas to come and reunite with their families, when they can't get a family reunion visa because the backlog is massive and some people are waiting a decade or more, they might come on a student visa instead and get to Australia and then apply for asylum, and they're already in Australia and so they're in that system and they can remain in Australia. So there's a whole lot of aspects where the government has, and previous governments, haven't wanted to upset the sense in migrant communities that you should be able to reunite with your family. They're now going to tighten up quite significantly.
Anna, thank you so much for joining us once again on Late Night Live to explain the mysteries of Canberra.
Well, there's many mysteries we haven't got to. Hopefully next week.
They keep coming, don't they?
Thank you.
Coming up, the Mecca Defence Pact.